Every muscle in my body wanted to charge ahead, looking for her. A Glock was tucked into my black pants, loaded with all 10 rounds, but I kept it hidden under my t-shirt. Chances were they'd see me before I saw them, and I wanted the element of surprise. I darted my glare to the white camera in the ceiling, the small ball rolling and zooming in. He knew I was here, and exactly where I was. Treading lightly and keeping my eyes open, I crept across the room and into the dimly lit passageway. There were 2 cabins on the left and 1 on the right. She could be anywhere, and I hoped Kai, who was 1 deck above, had found her already. I took a step to the left, grabbing the door handle, but a whimper stopped me in my tracks, and I listened. A grunt followed, and I turned toward my parents' cabin and threw open the door. Rika laid on my parents' bed, struggling with the ropes that were tied to her wrists. She jerked her head toward the door, noticing me, and sucked in a breath, her face cracking.
"Michael," she cried softly. "No, you shouldn't have come."
I charged over and grabbed the rope, seeing the broken glass. "God damn it, what did they do to you?" Her hands were tied above her head, bleeding, and her hair was damp with sweat. Little pools of blood sat in the creases of her hands, and she held a shard of glass in her fist.
"I needed to cut the rope."
Her voice shook, and I noticed that the glass in the headboard was shattered. She'd broken it, trying to escape. I took the shard out of her hand and sawed the remainder of the thread. "I'll get you out of here. I'm so sorry, baby." A horn blared outside, and I shot my head up, my veins firing. "Son of a bitch." Something was wrong. I severed the rope, tossing the shard on the bed, and pulled her up, the binding still wrapped around her wrists. "Come here." I took her hands and turned them palm up. But she pulled them away.
"I'm okay," she insisted. "We have to get out of here. They wanted you to find me. They could be anywhere."
My arms ached with the need to hold her, but I held back. We couldn't waste time. Will needed us, and she was fine. I turned around but held her wrist, keeping her close behind me as I walked through the door, looking left and right to make sure it was clear.
"Damon's with Trevor," she whispered.
I figured.
"He's the one who took me from my apartment."
I shook my head, trying to keep the anger at bay. Rika's hands were shredded because she was saving herself, not waiting for me. I'd always wanted that for her, hadn't I? To fight for herself. But all I felt was rage now. They'd taken her from me, and they could have taken her forever. I may never have found her. "Come on," I urged, pulling her through the salon again, toward the sliding glass doors and the stern. But as soon as we stepped on deck, I spotted Kai on the ground, and I straightened, bracing myself. He was breathing heavily, with blood coming out of his nose and mouth. Damon stood over him, glaring at me, and I shot my eyes to the speedboat behind him. It was empty. Where the fuck was Will? I inched out into the still air, pushing Rika behind me. Shit. Kai and Rika were hurt. Will was missing, and I had no idea how the hell I was going to get us out of this. Then I saw Trevor. He stood next to the side of the yacht, amusement in his eyes as he stared at me. He crooked a finger, urging us over. Rika tried to inch around me, but I tightened my grip on her arm, keeping her there. Leveling my gaze on my brother, I stepped over to the side and peered over.
"Will!"
I lost my breath. He was in the water, his head barely staying above the surface. I spotted a line of rope coming out of the water near him and followed it as it trailed up the side of the boat, over the edge, and onto the deck. The end was tethered to two cinder blocks at Trevor's feet, and there were also two more sets of blocks with ropes secured to them.
Jesus. He's got my hands tied behind my back, man, Will shouted,
which meant he couldn't untie the other end of the rope, most likely secured around one of his feet, or both. Will bounced in the water, trying to stay afloat with his legs, but he was struggling. I lurched for Trevor. But he pulled his hand out, holding up a pistol, and I stopped, glaring at him.
What the fuck? I yelled.
Did you know that the average depth of the Atlantic Ocean is 10,955 feet? He asked calmly, ignoring my anger. It's dark, cold, and when something goes down there, it's not coming back up. And then he glanced at Will in the water before turning his eyes back on me. You would never find him. I shot my gaze to Kai. He rested on his hands and knees, trying to stable himself, and I could see blood streaming down the side of his face.
Are you okay? I rushed out. I'm fine, he bit out, but I could tell he was shaky.
I should have done her before you got here, Trevor went on, gesturing to Rika behind me. But really, what fun is it if you can't watch, right?
What the fuck are you doing, Trevor? I asked as I slowly reached behind me and tapped my back, signaling to Rika.
She slid her hand up the inside of my shirt and pulled the gun out, slipping it into my hand behind my thigh.
I don't know,
Trevor answered, fake confusion on his face. But I'm certainly enjoying myself.
What the hell was the matter with him? He hated me, I knew that. But Will? Kai? Rika? He couldn't get away with this. Had he lost his fucking mind?
Go ahead, he challenged, pointing the gun at me. Rush me. You'd take a bullet, but you'd still take me down.
I shook my head and turned my eyes on Damon. Don't do this, I implored. Will and Kai have never hurt you. Rika's never hurt you.
But hurting them will hurt you, Damon retorted, planting his foot on Kai's back and shoving him back to the ground.
Kai grunted, squeezing his eyes shut. From the way he grabbed his side, I could guess he had a few broken ribs.
You've never suffered, Damon snarled. You've never had to lose, and this will change your life forever. You should never have chosen her over us.
You're a fucking coward,
Kai shouted at him. Damon just scowled at him, and then looked up at me again, an ocean separating us. I didn't even recognize him anymore.
Tell me you'll let her go, he demanded. Tell me everything can go back to the way it was in high school.
I steeled my spine, squeezing Rika's arm behind me.
She has no place with us, and you give her too much power over you, he continued. Tell me she's nothing. Tell me you choose us over her.
Or better yet,
he paused, a glint in his eyes.
Tell me you'd trade Rika for Will and Kai.
My throat tightened, and my heart hammered in my chest.
Choose, Trevor pressed.
Rika can take Will's place, and the four of you can be like none of this ever happened.
I heard her breathing behind me, shallow and fast, and I knew she was scared. I could feel her everywhere, on my skin, in my chest, in my hands. The sweetness of her lips as she panted against my mouth in the steam room.
I love you, Michael.
Will and Kai will be fine, Damon assured. But you have to sacrifice her.
Sacrifice her? I can't. I swallowed the lump in my throat. She was everywhere. Always everywhere. Years and years, and there was no shaking her. Every time I closed my eyes, she was there. It feels like you. 16, and looking at me like I was God. You're in everything. The moment I knew that heart of hers was mine, and I couldn't wait to be inside of her. Yes, it turns me on. Seeing her go over that edge and trust me to jump with her, as I felt her from the inside for the first time, and she came apart in my arms. God. I dropped my eyes to Kai, seeing my friend, and I could hear Will calling us from the water, begging, and what the fuck was I supposed to do? But Trevor didn't wait for an answer. He reached down and hauled up the blocks, sitting them on the edge of the yacht.
No! I shouted, letting go of Rika and holding out my hand. Stop! Just wait!
He tilted the blocks back and forth, toying with me.
Stop, I growled. Just...
I ground my teeth together, my head swimming.
Fuck you!
If I shot one of them, he would still have time to dump the blocks, and Damon could make short work of Kai before I even had a chance. I might be able to get Rika out of here, but I wouldn't be able to save them.
Why are you doing this?
I bared my teeth, seething.
Why?
For this, Trevor finally growled, showing his anger.
For this, right here. To see you exactly like this. You're so fucking desperate, it's priceless.
He took his hands off the blocks, leaving them to sit on the ledge, teetering and threatening to fall with the slightest vibration.
I could say it was all the attention laid on you for your basketball career, he explained. The way you always finish things I could never even start. Or the way Rika always loved you, not once ever looking at me the way she did you.
He hung the gun at his side and glared past me to Rika, who had stepped up next to me.
But really?
He gazed at her.
I think it's because the great Michael Crist is so fucking helpless right now, and I want to see the look in her eyes when she knows it's about to end and that you can't help her.
I breathed in and out, my lungs getting smaller and smaller.
Don't worry, Trevor soothed. You'll join her soon.
And then Trevor shot out his hand and pushed the blocks off the ledge. I growled, raging as I rushed forward, swinging out my arm and firing the gun 3 times, hitting him. But I didn't see where. I threw the gun down and leapt up to the ledge, diving off just as Will's head disappeared under the surface. I crashed through the water, my body immediately submerging and going cold with the rush of the icy black October sea. I opened my eyes, seeing Will just ahead of me, sinking fast and struggling against his ropes. I kicked and pushed my way through the water, reaching out and grabbing him by the shirt. But when I tried to pull him up, kicking and fighting my way to the surface, the purple light overhead was only disappearing. We were sinking. I dived back down, keeping hold of his clothes as my lungs stretched, growing desperate for air. Reaching his foot, I worked the knot, the fucking weight of the blocks making it hard to get the rope to thread back out. Will twisted and fought, keeping his eyes on the surface, and I yanked and jerked at the rope, trying to get him free. But the water was only getting blacker. The lights from the yacht were all but gone, and Rika and Kai were up there alone. I growled, the sound muffled in the water as I pulled and thrashed.
Fuck! I couldn't let him go. Please. Not again.
Squeezing the rope between my chilled fingers, I worked and pried, tearing my skin until... It gave way. The rope dislodged, and I quickly unraveled it, pulling it apart and letting the blocks and rope sink away into the black depths. I kept hold of Will and pulled him to the surface as he kicked. We broke through the water, sucking in air, and I darted my gaze up, seeing Kai with his hands around Damon's neck. He pressed him against the edge of the yacht, and then pulled his fist back and punched him.
Rika.
Go over there, I shouted at Will, gesturing to the speedboat. What about my hands?
His body was shaking from the water.
I have to get Rika,
and I swam for the yacht again. But then something crashed into the water on my right, and I looked up to see a rope draping down the side of the boat.
What the?
Two blocks came spilling over the edge then, sinking into the ocean, and I jerked my head up, seeing Trevor hunched over and heaving. But there was a twisted smile on his face.
Fuck!
I bellowed. I dived down, shooting my arms out in front of me and pushing the water back, struggling through the icy sea as I fought and kicked.
Rika.
I darted my eyes everywhere, looking for her hands, her white t-shirt, her hair. But I swam down, 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 as fast as I could, looking side to side and not wasting a second. But as the moments passed and I didn't see her, fear thundered in my chest. I was going to lose my fucking mind. Where the hell was she? Pressure built in my lungs and my eyes blurred. I heaved, needing air, and bellowing into the water, I shot back up for the surface and sucked in a hard breath as I came through.
Rika!
I raged, spinning in a circle to see if she came up.
Rika!
Nothing. I shot my head up, seeing Kai hanging over the edge, breathing hard and looking exhausted.
Kai, get in here! I yelled. I can't find her!
He looked up, narrowing his eyes in worry. I couldn't see Damon or Trevor, but I didn't fucking care anymore. Will was still tied up, and Rika was. I dived back down, hearing the distant sound of Kai entering the water seconds later, and we descended, pushing through the water and into the black. So far. It was so far down. She was down there already, getting farther and farther away from me, and I would never find her. Ever. Please, baby, where are you? And then my heart stopped, seeing a flash of white. Rika was rising faster and faster, her arms pushing her up and her legs kicking as she came into view, getting closer every second. Kai and I grabbed hold of her arms and pulled her up. We broke through the surface of the water, and she coughed and gasped, trying to take breaths. I held her up, touching her face.
Rika,
I breathed out, my heart aching like I had a knife lodged in it.
Are you okay? How did...
I trailed off, feeling my stomach coil at how close I'd come to losing her. She nodded and started to shake, her face cracking as she started to cry.
He hit me after you shot him, she choked out. It knocked me out long enough for him to tie me up. By the time I came to, he was forcing me over the edge.
I pulled her along, swimming back to the yacht. We climbed up onto the deck, Kai holding her as I pulled her up.
How did you get free?
I asked.
The shard.
She opened her fist, shivering.
I took it after you tossed it on the bed.
I pulled her into me, wrapping my arms around her, and squeezed her so hard my body shook.
Where's Damon?
I asked Kai, seeing him pull Will up and untie his hands. But it was Will who answered.
He took off in Python's speedboat while you guys were under.
I just closed my eyes and squeezed Rika in my arms. Kai and Will climbed the steps to the main level, and I pulled her along. She needed a hot shower, a warm bed, and me. We walked across the deck, and I spotted Trevor lying at the edge of the pool, bleeding and struggling to get up. He could barely lift his head.
I didn't know how many shots he'd caught out of the three I'd fired, but the blood spilled over the deck, and he was breathing heavily.
"Michael,"
he said, sounding out of breath, as he held his hand against the wound on his chest.
"Take the boat into port. I'm bleeding."
Kai and Will stood near, watching him, while I held Rika in my arms, anger and hatred boiling inside of me. None of us made a move to help. He'd nearly killed her, tried to kill Will, Kai, and threatened to kill me.
"Michael,"
he pleaded.
"I'm your brother."
I stood there, not seeing a brother. I saw blocks go over the edge. I saw Rika dumped like she was garbage, and Will sent to the bottom like he was nothing. I could have lost them. I could have lost her. Forever. Where was my brother then? Something fell behind my eyes, and I didn't blink. I may not have been able to choose between the lives of Rika and my friends, but I had no trouble choosing between them and my brother. Raising my foot, I planted my shoe on his shoulder and shoved. He grunted and grappled for my leg, fear rounding his eyes before he rolled and fell into the pool, his arms flailing as he sunk lower and lower. He tried to struggle, tried to grab at the water like it was a wall he could climb. But only his eyes broke the surface as he drifted to the bottom, peering up at us and seeing his hope only feet away, not coming for him.
"Michael!"
Rika looked at me, breathing hard.
"You, please, you'll have to live with this forever."
But I just turned my gaze back to Trevor, keeping my feet planted where they were. I knew she didn't want me to do it. I knew she worried I'd regret it, and I'd suffer consequences. I knew, no matter what, that Trevor was my brother, and he'd been a part of both of our lives. I watched as he struggled and tried to take in breaths, his body too weak from the blood loss to save himself and swim back up. And when he stopped moving, going still in the water, I closed my eyes and let my fists slowly uncurl. "You would never have been safe," I told her. She buried her face in my chest, and I held her as her body shook with silent sobs. I turned my eyes on Kai. "Get the boat into port, okay?" He nodded, holding his side. "Just take care of her. We got this." I took Rika's hand and pulled her through the salon and back down the passageway again, taking her into the cabin designated for me when I was on the yacht. I ran my hand through my hair, slicking back the wet strands and feeling like my heart was about to jump out of my chest. I almost lost her. Squeezing her hand, I headed straight into the bathroom, turned on the shower, and started throwing open cabinets, not sure what I was looking for. "Here," I went to her, rubbing my hands up and down her arms. "You're freezing. Get out of these clothes." And then I turned around, checking the shower temperature. "I'll run it hotter, okay?"
"Michael,"
she said gently, trying to stop me. But I pushed forward, feeling my stomach roll.
"We've got towels here for when you get out." I gestured to a cupboard. "Unless you want a bath instead, I can run one. Maybe soaking would be better."
"Michael."
I rubbed a hand down my face, trying to find my words. "I'll just try to find you some clothes. My mom probably has things here that you can wear, so..."
"Michael,"
she said louder, reaching up to take my face in her hands. But I tore myself away, leaning back on the sink and bowing my head, feeling pain everywhere. Was this what she wanted? For me to be vulnerable and feel the fear I felt tonight, Is this what she felt for me?
I thought you were gone, I said, barely audible. The water was so black, and I couldn't find you. I thought I'd never get to you. She came up to me, taking my face again. And I looked up into her blue eyes, knowing that would always haunt me. What if she had never come back up? What would I have done? I slid a hand around the back of her neck and wrapped my other arm around her waist, taking her lips in mine and kissing her so deep the heat of her mouth filled my entire body. I could kiss her forever. Touching my forehead to hers, I ran my thumb across her face, caressing it. I love you, Rika. I've always loved you. She broke out in a smile, tears streaming down her face as she circled her arms around my neck and pulled me in close. I squeezed her tight, burying my face in her hair, never wanting to let her go. After all the years and all the times when I should have known, it took her nearly getting killed for me to realize what she meant to me, for me to realize how ingrained in every moment of my life she was, and how she'd always been there, right in front of me. Her, riding her bike around my driveway when she was 5. Her, learning to swim in my pool. Her, running around and doing cartwheels in my backyard. Her, biting her nails when I entered the room. Her, sitting next to my mother at every basketball game in high school. Her, refusing to even look in my direction when I hung out with a girl. And me, barely able to hold back the smile at the little looks she stole and how nervous she was when I was close. She was always there, and it was always us. Trevor made me want to resent it, but it was seeing her with Kai last night that made me feel it. Nothing could shake us. She was mine, and I was hers, and it would never break. I inhaled a deep breath, finally feeling my stomach unknot. "Did they hurt you in any other way?" I asked. She pulled back, shaking her head.
"No."
"Damon's still out there."
"Damon's gone,"
she stated, so sure. She took the hem of my wet shirt and pulled it up over my head.
"How are we going to tell your parents about this?"
she said, worry written all over her face.
"About Trevor."
"I'll handle it," I told her, pulling her shirt off as well. "I don't want you to worry about anything." And I scooped her up, wrapping her legs around me and sitting on the sink edge, just holding her close. She hovered her lips over mine, sinking her body into me like she was about to melt.
"You really love me?"
I closed my eyes, breathing her in.
"I love you so much,"
I whispered, tightening my hold on her. "This is where I live."
Chapter 29. Erica. Present. Walking into the Christ home, I gave Edward a small smile as he took my coat and then helped my mother with hers. She looked so beautiful. It had been 3 weeks since she'd returned from the facility in California, and although every day was like a ticking time bomb, I grew more and more relaxed as the days passed that she wouldn't relapse. Her A-line black dress hugged her body that no longer looked so frail, and the color in her cheeks made her seem 10 years younger. She was looking more and more like the mother from my childhood every day. I wore an ivory-colored dress that fell to the tops of my knees, and my mother had politely mentioned that it might be too tight for Thanksgiving dinner. I didn't hesitate to let her know that Michael liked looking at my body, and I liked him looking, so there. She blushed, and I laughed. Rika, I heard Mrs. Crist call. I looked up to see Michael's mother strolling through the foyer, decked out and looking elegant as usual. Darling, you look wonderful. She embraced me, giving me a quick peck on the cheek. Then she turned to my mom. Christiane, she said, hugging her, please come and stay with me. Since your house won't be ready until next summer, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't be here. My mother pulled back and smiled. I would love to, but right now I'm enjoying the city so much. No one except Michael, Kai, Will, and me knew the real cause of the fire, and since the restoration on our house here had slowed down due to the falling temperatures, I'd brought my mother to Meridian City with me. I'd offered her the spare room in my apartment, but she wanted to give Michael and me our privacy, opting for a hotel instead. I'd stayed with her there for a couple of weeks to make sure she was okay, but I slowly relaxed when she started spending her time at the gym, getting her health back, and volunteering at a shelter to keep busy and meet some new people. She was eating well, sleeping even better, and surprisingly, in no hurry to return to Thunder Bay. Eventually, though, I gave her some space and took myself back to Delcor, much to Michael's relief. Not that he didn't want me around her, but he still got antsy about my safety. He said it had to do with Damon's unknown whereabouts, but I knew it was something else. Since the night at the yacht over a month ago, he'd woken up in the middle of the night a few times, sweating and breathing hard. He'd had nightmares about the water, about me being pulled down and him grabbing for my hand, just like he had that night. Only in his nightmares, he didn't find me. I was lost. Mrs. Crist, I can't believe how busy you've been, I said, looking around, amazed at the newly redecorated sitting room and all of the holiday decor splashed around the house. Garlands and wreaths hung from the walls and stairs, and I looked up, seeing Michael appear at the top of the stairs. He descended in his pressed black suit with the smallest smile curling his lips. His eyes zoned in on me, and I inhaled a deep breath, feeling my stomach flip like always. Well, Mrs. Crist said, sounding sad, I needed to stay busy. I tore my eyes away from Michael and met his mother's glossy eyes that welled with tears. Guilt washed over me. I'm so sorry. Trevor was dangerous, more so than Damon because Trevor hid it so well. But I couldn't imagine losing a child, even one like that. I hoped I never had to feel what she did. But she just shook her head at me, sniffling. Please don't say that. Who my son was wasn't your fault. And you're both safe, she said. And then, looking to Michael, I wouldn't trade that. Michael stared down at her, a look of regret crossing his face. Other than me, I was pretty sure his mother was the only woman he loved. And while his first instinct had been to protect me, his second had been to protect her. After Trevor had drowned, Will tried to talk Michael into dumping him into the ocean on the way back, so Michael wouldn't have to deal with telling his parents that he'd killed his brother. Michael wouldn't even listen. He couldn't leave his mother's son out there. At the very least, he had to bring a body back to her, and he knew he couldn't look at her day in and day out and lie to her. So after we'd brought the yacht into port, we'd called the police and told them everything. How Trevor took me, lured Michael and his friends there, and nearly killed Will and me. It was devastating, and while Mrs. Crist was thankful we were okay, she would hurt for a long time. Mr. Crist, on the other hand, seemed more disappointed than grief-stricken. He only had one son now, and instead of the contempt with which he usually treated Michael, he began getting very involved in his life, wasting no time in shifting the hopes he had for Trevor onto Michael. Good thing for Michael he had plenty of practice standing up to his father. My mother and Mrs. Crist walked toward the kitchen, and Michael's father approached, carrying a drink in his hand with a cigar between his fingers.
I want to sit down today. We've got things to discuss.
He spoke to Michael, but glanced to me, his indication clear. since I wouldn't be marrying Trevor, his plans now included Michael.
Things to discuss, Michael mused, taking my hand. You mean my future and Rika's money? Because it's too late, I broke the trust. Everything is in her name now.
You did what?
His father growled. I grinned, letting Michael lead me away. I'd love to sit down and discuss my future next time you're in town, I told Mr. Crist, letting him know I was the one in charge of my family's business now. There were several pieces of real estate he and my father co-owned, so I had no choice but to work with him, but I wasn't a pawn for men to marry and govern. Now he knew. Michael and I walked into the dining room, seeing Will and Kai standing around the table, talking with drinks in hand, while their parents and several others congregated in small groups around the room. Servers flitted in and out, carrying trays of hors d'oeuvres and refilling champagne glasses. Kai met us halfway, closely followed by Will.
I found Damon,
Kai told Michael right away.
Where is he?
I asked.
St. Petersburg.
Russia,
Michael said, a stunned look on his face.
What the fuck?
Kai continued.
His parole officer came looking for him. Damon missed his check-in with him, and after tracking his passport, they found him there, he explained. It makes sense. That's where his father's people are from, so he's on friendly ground. They're not going to go after him, of course, but we can.
I shook my head. Just leave him alone. Michael turned his eyes on me, looking down.
I'm not waiting for him to just show up back here, Rika. He's dangerous.
He won't come back, I stated. He won't want to fail a third time. Just leave him alone, and let's move on. Kai and Michael studied me for a few moments, and I hoped they understood what I wasn't saying. There had been too much pain, too many years, and too much wasted time. We all needed to start living again. Damon wouldn't try to hurt me again. Another attempt after two failures would make him look pathetic. He was gone. And since we'd found the phone from Devil's Night right where I suspected, in Trevor's cabin on board Python, and destroyed it, there was absolutely nothing holding us back anymore. It was time to start having some fun.
So what do we do now?
Will asked. The corner of Michael's lips lifted.
What we're good at, I guess. Wreaking a little fucking havoc.
And then he jerked his chin, gesturing to the two female servers behind Kai and Will. The guys turned around, seeing two college-age girls, dressed in black pencil skirts, white blouses, and black vests. They tried to hide their smiles, eyeing them as they lit candles and checked the table settings.
Delay dinner for us?
Michael asked. Kai turned back around, his chest shaking with a quiet laugh.
How long do you need?
He asked, backing away with mischief in his eyes.
An hour.
Kai and Will turned around with shitty-ass grins on their faces as they followed the girls and disappeared into the kitchen. I narrowed my eyes up at Michael, confused.
Come on.
He tugged at my hand.
I want to show you something.
And then he pulled me along, out of the dining room. I stepped out of the car, the leaves rustling under my heels as I pulled my ivory-colored coat tight around me and slammed the car door. The day was clear, not a cloud in the sky as I breathed out steam and looked up, seeing the scaffolding, tarps, and small yellow bulldozers sitting around the old cathedral. What's going on? I asked. It wasn't being torn down, was it?
I'm having it restored,
he answered, taking my hand and leading me inside the front doors. I walked in, my gaze immediately shooting everywhere as I took in all the work the crew had already done. The broken and trashed pews in the balcony were now all torn out, and all of the garbage and piles of debris around the floor were completely gone. The sanctuary and the old altar had been removed, and there was now a proper door hung at the entrance of the catacombs. Tarps hung over exposed areas in the roof and walls, and a new cement foundation had been laid, clean and solid. To the right and left, scaffolding went all the way up to the roof, and I also noticed wood framing. as if a second floor were being added. There were no workers here, probably because it was Thanksgiving. Restored? I repeated, still confused. As what? As a church? A historical site? He opened his mouth, taking in a deep breath as if he were a little apprehensive.
As a house, he finally answered.
A house? I don't understand. He breathed out a laugh and approached me.
I should have talked to you about it, but I...
He looked around.
I really wanted this, and I was hoping you'd want to live here.
I froze.
With me,
he added. Live here? With him? I mean, yeah, I was already practically living in his penthouse in the city with him right now, but I still had my apartment, and this was a house. A whole different level. I loved the idea of turning it into a home. As strange as it might be to other people, it's where some of my favorite memories with Michael occurred. I loved it here. But would this be just his place and I'd live here? Or would it be ours? Could he send me packing any time he wanted? Or did a house mean something more? So what does this mean exactly? I inched out, my heart drumming faster. He kept his eyes on mine and walked up to me slowly, moving forward and pushing me back. I gasped, hitting a stone column. With amusement in his eyes, he leaned in, whispering,
"Turn around."
I hesitated, wondering what he was up to, but I never backed away from a challenge. Turning around slowly, I let him take my hands and plant them on the column in front of me. Then he snaked a hand around my waist and covered my back with his chest, nuzzling my neck with his lips. I wasn't cold anymore.
"It means that I want to keep playing," he said, his voice deep and filled with heat. "It means that until the house is done and we're ready to settle back here, my apartment is your apartment, my bed is yours, and my eyes are only on you."
He kissed my neck, his hot lips sending shivers across my body.
"It means that I'm going to do my best to piss you off every chance I get, because there's nothing hotter than when you're mad."
I could hear the grin in his voice. He dipped his hand down to the inside of my thigh.
"And then I'm going to do my best to remind you of how nice I am, so you can't stop thinking about me when we're not together."
I sucked in a breath, feeling his fingers inch up my thigh, already making me throb.
"It means that you're going to finish school, but I respectfully request that, when you come home, you do me before your homework," he continued, brushing his thumb over my clit through my panties. "And it means that you're going to have to constantly look over your shoulder for what I have up my sleeve next, because I'll always be coming for you."
And then his other fist came up, and I watched, wide-eyed, as he uncurled his fingers, and a glint of sparkle appeared in front of me. I stopped breathing as he slid the ring on my left hand and continued to whisper in my ear,
"And you're going to want every second of it, because I know what you like, Rika, and I can't live without you."
I shook, my eyes pooling with tears, as he wrapped both arms around me and held on for dear life.
"I love you,"
he breathed out in my neck. "Oh, my God." I pulled my hand down, holding it with my right as I looked at the ring. A flood of heat hit my chest, and I stopped breathing. I know this ring. It was a platinum band with an array of diamonds, looking almost like a snowflake. One stone sat in the middle, surrounded by 10 more, with yet another circle of about 20 diamonds on the outside. "This is one of the rings I took on Devil's Night," I said, my voice shaking as I looked up at him. "I thought you had returned everything."
"I did,"
he nodded.
"But this one I bought."
"Why?" Why would he buy a ring for someone he hated? It would have been after the videos exploded online, so it didn't make any sense. He tightened his arms around me.
"I don't know. Maybe I couldn't let a piece of that night go."
And then he leaned in, whispering in my ear,
Or maybe somewhere down deep. I always knew this day would come.
I smiled, tears streaming down my face. It was perfect. The ring, the house, even the proposal. He'd promised to piss me off, but he also promised to be good to me and always come for me. But I had to wonder, would we really be able to do this, keep up the games, the excitement, the passion? People don't live like we do, Michael. I turned my head to look at him again. They go to movies. They cuddle in front of fires.
I'll fuck you in front of a fire,
he retorted, spinning me around and smirking as I laughed. But then he came in and leaned his lips into my forehead, speaking quietly.
Other people don't matter to us, Rika. We don't let their rules contain us. What we can and can't do is irrelevant. Who's going to stop us?
I wrapped my arms around his neck, elation sweeping over me as I tilted my head back, staring up at the high ceiling.
What?
He asked. I inhaled a deep breath, my veins charged with excitement. Our house, I mused. I can't believe this is ours. And then I met his eyes. I love you. He grabbed my face and kissed me, his warmth spreading down my body.
I love you too, he told me. So was that a yes, then?
I nodded. Yes. But then I popped my eyes wide and pulled away. The catacombs, I blurted out. They're not filling them in, are they? He laughed.
No, they'll stay accessible.
I dropped my arms and walked for the door, slipping off my coat and hanging it over the scaffolding.
Hey, what are you doing? He asked.
I spun around, cocking my head coyly. You forgot to get on one knee. He snorted.
Well, it's a little too late, Rika. I already proposed.
You can still get on your knees. And I crooked a finger, turning back around.
Well, the contractor said he might stop by today to do some more assessments, he warned.
But I only grinned and shot him a challenge over my shoulder as I opened the door. Are you tapping out? He shook his head, his mischievous eyes telling me everything I needed to know as he walked toward me. He was always game. And thanks to his tutelage, now so was I. He'd corrupted me.
Epilogue. Michael. The smell of lilies and rain drifted into my nose, and I chased it, burying my face into the pillow. Rika. Sleep weighed heavy on my eyes, and I put out a hand, smoothing it over the sheets and searching for her next to me in bed. But she wasn't there. I blinked, forcing my eyes open. Alarm set in as I turned over and propped myself up on one elbow, quickly twisting my head around to look for her. And I immediately found her. I relaxed, a grin lifting my lips as I watched her in the shower, the one that sat in my bedroom as a feature in my Delcor apartment. Our apartment. Within a month after everything had happened at the yacht, I moved her in. She slept here every night anyway, and since Will wanted to be close, we gave her apartment to him. Kai, on the other hand, opted for distance. He bought an old Victorian on the other side of the city, and I wasn't sure why. He could have had any apartment he wanted here, and I didn't see the value in the black brick monstrosity he'd purchased that should have been condemned. But for some reason, he wanted to be on his own. Rika ran a loofah down her arms, soaping up her body, and I turned on my side, propping my head up on my hand as I watched her. She must have sensed me, because she turned her head, smiling at me over her shoulder. She placed her foot on the edge of the tub and bent over, running the loofah down her leg slowly and playfully, knowing what she was doing to me with her fake, innocent little smiles. The rainfall shower fell over her body, but her hair wasn't wet, since she had tied it up in a loose bun. And despite my growing erection under the sheets and the smell of her body wash filling the room,
I stayed put, just watching her. The reward for my patience would come soon enough. Sometimes, I just had to watch her. I had to keep my eyes on her, because it was still so hard to believe that she was real, that she was here, and mine. I'd asked myself 1,000 times how we got here, how we found each other and made it here. She would say that it was Devil's Night. Without the events of that night, I wouldn't have challenged her. She wouldn't have learned how to be strong and fight back, or how to own who she was and save herself. We wouldn't have been locked palm to palm, trying to push the other one down, and we wouldn't have made each other the people we were now. Everything happens for a reason, she would say. She would say that I built her, that I created a monster, and that somewhere during the blood, tears, struggle, and pain, we realized that it was love, that all sparks lead to a flame. But what she failed to remember was, our story started long before that night. I stand outside my new G-class, leaning back against it with my arms folded over my chest. I have shit to do and places to be, and I don't have time for this. Turning over my palm, I look down at my phone and the text from my mom again. Stuck in the city and Edward is busy. Pick up Rika from soccer practice, please. 8 p.m. I roll my eyes and check the time on the phone. 8:14. Where the hell is she? Kai, Will, and Damon are already at the party, and I'm late. Because why? Oh yeah, I guess being 16 and finally getting my fucking license means playing chauffeur to 13-year-olds whose mothers can't get off their drunken asses to pick them up. Rika walks out of the soccer complex, still dressed in her red and white uniform and leg pads, and stops, seeing me standing there. Her eyes are red as if she's been crying, and I can tell by the way she stiffens that she's uncomfortable. She's scared of me. I hold back my smile. I kind of like how she's always aware of me, even if I would never admit it out loud. Why are you picking me up? She asks softly, her hair pulled back in a ponytail with flyaways floating around her face. Believe me, I shoot out sarcastically. I've got better things to do. Get in. And I turn around to open my door and climb in the car. I start the engine, shifting it into gear as if I'm not going to wait for her, and I see her walk hurriedly around the front and open the passenger door, climbing in. She puts on her seatbelt and stares at her lap, remaining silent. She looks upset, but I don't think it has anything to do with me. Why are you crying? I demand, trying to act like I don't care if she answers me or not. Her chin shakes, and she puts her hand to her neck, touching the fresh scar from the accident that killed her father only a couple of months ago. The girls were making fun of my scar, she says quietly. And then she turns her eyes on me, looking hurt. Is it really that ugly? I look at it, feeling anger. I could get those girls to shut up. But I push down my emotions and shrug, acting like her feelings don't matter. It's big, I answer, pulling out of the parking lot. She turns back around, her shoulders slumping in sadness as she drops her head. So fucking broken. I mean, yeah, she lost her dad recently, and her mom is caught up in her own misery and selfishness. But every time I see Rika, she looks like a feather that will blow away with the slightest breeze. Get over it already. Crying's not going to help. She continues to sit quietly, so small next to me, since I'm nearly 6 feet now. and while Rika isn't short, she looks like something that has melted and is about to disappear altogether. I shake my head, checking my phone again for the time. Damn, I was late. But then I hear a horn blow, and I pop my eyes up, seeing taillights race for me. Shit! I bellow, slamming on the brakes and jerking the steering wheel to the side. Rika sucks in a breath and grabs the door as I spot a car stopped in the middle of the country road and another one swerving up ahead of me and then speeding off. I come to a screeching halt off to the side, both of our bodies pushing together against our seatbelts with the sudden stop. Jesus! I bark, seeing a woman kneeling in the street. What the hell? The taillights of the other car grow smaller and smaller in the distance, and I look over my shoulder, not seeing any other cars coming. Opening the door, I step out of the car, hearing Rika do the same behind me. I walk over to the middle of the road, and as I get closer, I see what the woman is hovering over. I can't believe that asshole just drove off, she fumes, turning around to look at me. A dog, barely alive, lies in the road, whimpering as it struggles for short, shallow breaths. There's blood spilling out of its stomach, and I can see some of its insides. It's just a little guy, some kind of spaniel, and my stomach rolls, hearing its strangled breathing. It's suffocating. The prick that sped off must have hit it. Shouldn't the kid go sit in the car? The woman asks, looking at Rika next to me. But I don't spare Rika a glance. Why did everyone try to coddle her? My mother, my father, Trevor. It only weakened her. The lady's kid sat in her car, calling for her, and I looked down at the dog, hearing it whimper and seeing it jerk as it struggled. You can go ahead and go, I tell her, gesturing to her kids in the car. I'll see if I can find an open vet. She peers up at me, looking half uncertain and half thankful. Are you sure? She asks, shooting her children a glance. I nod. Yeah, get your kids out of here. She stands up, gives the little dog a sad look, her eyes watering, and then she turns and gets in the car. Thank you, she calls. I wait for her to leave and turn to Rika. Go sit in the car. I don't want to. I narrow my eyes on her and snap. Now! Her tear-filled eyes look up at me desperately, but she eventually spins around and rushes for my car. Kneeling down, I put my hand on top of the little dog's head, feeling his soft fur between my fingers, and stroke him gently. His paws shake as he fights for breath, and the gargled sound in his throat is making my eyes blur and my heart pump painfully. It's okay, I say quietly, a tear spilling down my face. Helpless. I hate being helpless. Closing my eyes, I stroke his head and then slowly trail my hand down. Down the back of its head, down the back of its neck, and then I curl my fingers around its throat and squeeze as tight as I can. It jerks, its body shaking just barely as it musters the last of its energy to fight. But there's barely anything left. My body burns, every muscle tight, and I steel my jaw, trying to hold out for one more second. Just one more second. I squeeze my eyes shut, tears caught in my throat. The dog spasms, and then, finally, he goes limp, the life drained out of him. I let out a shaky breath and pull my hand away. Fuck. Acid bile fills my throat, and the pangs of nausea hit the back of my mouth. I heave, but I force deep breaths in and out, pushing it back down. I slide my hands under the dog and lift him up, ready to carry him to the car. But as soon as I turn around, I stop. Rika is standing a few feet behind me, and I know she saw everything. She looks at me like I betrayed her. I avert my eyes, hardening myself, and walk around her, putting the dog in the back of the G-Class. Who the fuck is she to judge me? I did what I had to do. I grab a towel from my duffel bag, having just gotten done with basketball practice before picking up Rika, and lay the dog on it. Taking out another towel, I wipe up the small amount of blood on my hands, and then lay that on top of him as well, shutting the back hatch. Climbing back in the car, I start the engine as Rika opens up the passenger door and plops down, not saying a word to me. I speed off, gripping the steering wheel, and her silence is as loud as my father's insults and berating. I did what was right. Screw you. I don't fucking care what you think. I breathe hard, getting angrier by the second. You think that the vet who put your cat to sleep a year ago is any better? I charge, shooting her glares as I watch the road. Huh? Her lips tighten, and I can see the tears pooling again. You did it with your hands, she cries, turning to me and yelling. You killed him yourself, and I could never have done that. And that's why you'll always be weak, I throw back. You know why most people in the world are unhappy, Rika? Because they don't have the courage to do the one thing that will change their lives. That animal was in misery, and you were in misery watching it. Now he's not suffering anymore. I'm not weak, she argues, but her chin trembles anyway. And what you did didn't make me happy. It didn't make me feel any better. I smile nastily. You think I'm bad? You think less of me? Well, guess what? I don't give a fuck what you think. You're a 13-year-old piece of baggage my family has to look after, who's going to turn into nothing but an 18-year-old copy of your drunk mother. Her eyes flood, and she looks about ready to break. Only you probably won't be able to land a rich husband with that scar. I growl. She sucks in a breath, looking stunned. Her face cracks, and her body racks with sobs. She grabs the door handle and begins yanking and pulling it, trying to get out of the car. Rika! I yell. I'm going 60 fucking miles an hour. I dart my hand over, grabbing her wrists and swerving the car off to the side, screeching to a halt. She fumbles, unlocking the door, and jumps out, running away into the trees. I put the car in neutral and set the parking brake, pushing open the door and jumping out. Get back in the car! I yell, slamming the door shut. She swings around. No! I run after her. Where the hell do you think you're going? I got shit to do. I don't have time for this. I'm going to see my dad, she calls over her shoulder. I'll walk home. Like hell you will. Get in the damn car and stop pissing me off. Leave me alone! I stop, fuming. The cemetery is right over the hill, but it's pitch black outside. I shake my head, backing away. Fine, I bark. Go visit your dad, then. Spinning around, I storm from my car and climb in, leaving her out there. Turning on the engine, I hesitate for a moment. It's dark, and she's alone. Fuck it. If she wants to be a brat, then it isn't my fault. I put it into gear and speed down the road, heading straight to my house. Leaving the car running, I hop out and walk to the garden shed, digging out a shovel and going back to my car. My ears turn cold from the October chill, but the rest of my body is still on fire from the fight. She looked at me, just like my father always did, as if everything I do is wrong. I bottle up what's inside me, the anger and this need I can't explain. Something inside of me wants to self-destruct, wants to make messes, and wants to do the things others won't do. I don't want to hurt people, but the more time that passes, the more it feels like I'm trying to crawl out of my head. I want chaos. And I'm tired of being powerless. I'm tired of him keeping me down. I tried to do the hard thing today, the thing no one else would do but had to be done. And she'd looked at me just like him, like there was something wrong with me. Tossing the shovel in the car, I race down the driveway and make my way to the only place I can think of. St. Killian's. I pull up outside the old cathedral. I keep the headlights on, and I walk around to the side, starting to dig the hole. The dog hadn't had a collar, and it can't stay exposed long enough for me to find its owner, so I have to bury it. And this is the one place I like, so it makes sense to do it here. After digging the hole about 2 feet deep, I return to my car and open the back door, hearing notifications from my cell phone up on the front seat. The guys are probably wondering where the hell I am. I was supposed to go home and collect our stock of toilet paper, spray paint, and nails for some Devil's Night pranks. The same boring shit we always do before we go get drunk at the warehouse. I cradle the dog in my arms, leaving him wrapped in the blankets, and carry him to the hole, kneeling down and gently placing him in. The blood had soaked through the towel, and my hand is stained red. I wipe it off on my jeans, and then take the shovel again, filling in the hole. When I'm done, I stand there, leaning on the long wooden handle of the shovel, as I stare at the mound of fresh dirt. You're weak. Nothing. Stop pissing me off. I'd said the same things to her that my father says to me. How could I do that? She isn't weak. She's a kid. I'm angry at my father, and I'm angry that she pulls at me as much as she does, ever since we were little. And I'm angry that I grew up so pissed off about everything. There's not much that makes me feel good. But I shouldn't have hurt her. How could I have said those things? I wasn't him. I let out a breath, seeing the cold steam expel from my mouth. It's freezing out here, and the chill finally seeps into my bones, reminding me that I'd left her. Alone. In the dark. In the cold. I charge up to the car, throwing the shovel in the back and grabbing my phone. Checking the time. 1 hour. I left her 1 hour ago. Climbing in, I start the car and put it in reverse, backing up and turning around. Slamming into first, I peel out of the clearing, down the old dirt road, seeing the cathedral disappear in the darkness in my rearview mirror. I speed down the highway and through the community gate, turning into Grove Park Lane and racing to the end, where St. Peter's Cemetery sits. Rika had dived into the woods, coming into the cemetery through the back, but I just drive in, knowing right where to go. Her father's headstone sits not far from my family's tomb. He could have afforded something that grandiose, too, but Schrader Fane wasn't a pretentious asshole like the men in my family. A simple marker was enough, and all he deemed appropriate, according to his will. I drive down the dark, narrow lane, nothing but trees and a sea of gray, black, and white stones to my left and right. Stopping at the top of a small hill, I park and turn off the car, already spotting what I think is a pair of legs lying on the grass a ways down. Jesus. Racing down the grass in between headstones, I see Rika lying over her father's grave, curled up, and tucking her hands into her chest. I stop and gaze down at her sleeping, for a moment seeing that baby from so long ago. Kneeling down on one knee, I slide my hands underneath her body and lift her up, so small and light. She squirms in my arms.
"Michael,"
she says. "Shh," I soothe. "I've got you."
"I don't want to go home,"
she protests, reaching up to hook a hand over my shoulder with her eyes still closed. Neither do I. I spot a stone bench a few yards back up the hill and carry her, guilt racking through me over how cold her skin is. I shouldn't have left her. Sitting down on the bench, I keep her in my lap as she lays her head against my chest, and I hold her close, trying to warm her or do anything to make her feel better. "I shouldn't have said those things to you," I admit in a raspy voice. "Your scar isn't ugly." She slides her arms around my waist and presses close, shivering.
"You never apologize," she states. "To anybody."
"I'm not apologizing," I shoot back, kind of joking. "I am apologizing, actually. I feel bad, but I have a hard time ever admitting I did anything wrong. Probably because my father never fails to let me know anyway." But she's right. I never apologize. People take the shit I dole out, but not her. She ran away from me, in the dark, into a cemetery. "You got a lot of guts," I tell her. "I don't. I'm just a coward who picks on kids."
"That's not true," she replies, and I can tell there's a smile in there somewhere.
But she doesn't see what I see. She's not in my head. I'm a coward, and I'm mean, and I feel so fucking aggravated all the time. I tighten my hold on her, trying to keep her warm. "Can I tell you something, kid?" I ask, a lump swelling in my throat. "I'm always afraid. I do what he tells me to do. I stand and speak, or I stay silent, and I never say no to anything he wants. I never stand up for myself." I told her she was weak. But it was me. I'm weak. I hate who I am. Everything gets in my head, and I have no control. "People don't see me, Rika," I confide. "I only exist as a reflection of him." She tilts her head up a little, her eyes still closed.
"That's not true," she mumbles sleepily. "You're always the first person I notice in a room."
My eyebrows pinch together in sadness, and I turn my head away, afraid she can hear my heavy breathing.
"Do you remember when your mom made you and your friends take Trevor and me hiking with you last summer?" she asks. "You let us do everything. You let us get close to the edge of the cliff, climb boulders. You let Trevor swear." Her fingers curl into my back, clutching my t-shirt. "But you wouldn't let us go too far. You said we needed to save our energy for the return trip. That's how you are."
"What do you mean?" She inhales a deep breath and then exhales.
"Well, it's like you're saving your energy for something, holding back," she says, nestling into me and getting comfortable. "But it doesn't make any sense. Life is one way, and there is no return trip. What are you waiting for?"
My chest shakes for a moment, and I stare down at her, her words hitting me like a truck. What am I waiting for? The rules, the restraints, the expectations, and what was considered acceptable were things that held me back, but they were all things of other people's design, other people's restraints, other people's rules and expectations. And they were all an illusion. They only exist when I let them. She's absolutely right. What is my father going to do to me? And do I care? I want that. You can't have it. Well, what happens if I take it anyway? I want to do that. You can't. Who's going to stop me? Jesus, she's right. What the fuck am I waiting for? What can he do? I want a little havoc, a little trouble, a little fun, a chance to go where my heart takes me. Who the hell's going to stop me? Every tense muscle in my body begins to slowly relax, and the knots in my stomach start to uncoil. My skin buzzes, and I feel my insides flip, forcing me to hold back a smile. And I inhale a deep, cool breath, filling my lungs with air that tastes like water in a desert. Yes. Keeping her in my arms, I stand up, holding her tight as I carry her back to the car. I don't bother taking her home. I don't want her to be alone. I carry her inside my house, the foyer dark since it's almost 10. My father is no doubt in the city for the night, and my mother is probably on her way to bed. But as I climb the stairs, I pass her in the hallway, Rika passed out in my arms.
Is she okay?
My mom rushes up to us, already dressed in a nightgown with a book in her hand. She's fine, I reply, stepping into my room. Walking over to my bed, I lie her down on top of the comforter and pull the blanket kept down at the bottom over her.
Why don't you put her in a guest room?
My mother suggests. But I shake my head. I'll sleep in one tonight. Let her have my room. She needs to feel safe. And then I look at my mother. She should have her own room here, though. She sleeps over a lot since her father's death, and given her mother's behavior, I don't see that changing anytime soon. Let her have a space that feels like a home. My mom nods.
That's a good idea.
I walk past my mother, grabbing a clean pair of jeans and a t-shirt out of my closet.
Poor thing.
My mother strokes her hair.
So fragile.
No, she isn't, I correct. Don't coddle her. I snatch my black hoodie off the chair by the door and head into the bathroom to change, since the dog's blood is all over my jeans. After I'm in fresh clothes, I dial Kai, hearing loud music and lots of voices in the background.
Do you still have those masks we used for paintball last weekend? I ask, stuffing my wallet in my new jeans and running my fingers through my hair.
Yeah, they're in the trunk of my car, he answers.
Good. Get the guys and meet me at Sticks.
What are we going to do?
Whatever we want, I reply. And then I hang up, walk back into my bedroom, and take one last look at Rika as she sleeps on my bed. The corners of my mouth lift, and I can't wait for tonight. She corrupted me.
This concludes Corrupt by Penelope Douglas, narrated by Tatiana Sokolov and Jeremy York. Copyright 2015 by Penelope Douglas. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Penelope Douglas, care of Distel and Goderich Literary Management, and was produced in the year 2016 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit Tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks and to take advantage of special offers.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.